In the marketing world, there is something called the rule of seven. Anybody a marketing major here? My brother was, so he probably knows about this. Basically, before someone will buy something from you, they need to hear your message about the product seven times. That's the kind of rule of thumb, probably at a minimum. Now, also, many of you parents know that when you have a picky eater, there's some kind of rule, maybe of seven, in helping your kids try new foods. Apparently, some of the science behind that is that your taste buds need more than one chance to try a new food before they can decide if you like it. Maybe 7 to 10 bites. Not all at the same time, but at different times, so your taste buds can get used to this new idea. Can I tell you a secret? The secret of these kinds of numbers is not the numbers themselves. It's repetition, familiarity, perseverance, understanding. It's the time it takes to turn something around in our heads before we feel like we get it enough to accept it. And it's the secret that what we keep doing is what we become, and who we follow is who we become like. This week, we're at Mark chapter 8. Last week, the 8:30 service, you guys got to hear part of this chapter, the super short sermon, I call it. And you can go online and listen to that again if you want the whole chapter again together. We're going to take a break during the Advent Christmas season from Mark. For the 5 weeks of Advent, you will each week in your devotional, if you're following, just be reading a small portion of Mark chapter 9. But we're not going to take a break from Jesus. On Sundays, we're going to do some flashbacks to a part of Jesus' story that Mark didn't cover. Did anybody realize that? Mark doesn't cover Jesus' birth story like some of the other Gospels do. You might want to think of it as the backstage story of Jesus. So before we move ahead by going back, let's go back in Mark and do some review of the first 7 chapters of Mark, just to kind of solidify where we've been before we go all the way back to the beginning and after the first of the year catch back up. The first few weeks, we had a word a week. Remember, I was testing some of you. We started in Mark chapter 1 with preparation. John the Baptist preparing for Jesus. Jesus preparing for public ministry. Us preparing for meeting Jesus. And we continued in Mark chapter 1 with participation. Jesus inviting others to participate in his work. And we are invited to participate with the work Jesus is doing. In Mark 2, Jesus started surprising us. Remember the phrase, wait, what? He's forgiving sins, calling tax collectors, turning around the Old Testament laws, and generally shocking and confusing everyone. Remember that? And in Mark chapter 3, we have stories of identity, who we are in relation to Jesus, and whether or not we are willing to receive the identity Jesus has for us. In Mark chapter 4, we learned about the sower and the seeds and the soil. And we asked with Jesus, what kind of soil am I? Further in Mark 4, we saw Jesus' goodness and power as he spoke to the storm. Peace, be still. When we turn our eyes to Jesus, we find he sometimes calms the storm, and he sometimes calms us right in the middle of the storm. And then in Mark 5, we found Jesus as the Prince of Peace, our source of security. And like the demon-possessed man that he freed, once Jesus speaks peace into us, we have a story to tell of God's work in us. And in Mark 6, Jesus' journey had failure, fun, miraculous provision, work, and a lot of mess. A lot like many of our journeys, right? And in order to make it through, we need to stay close to Jesus, stay on the road, keep walking. And then in Mark 7, we found the contrast between the prideful Pharisees and the desperate Syrophoenician woman. We often respond differently to Jesus based on who we are, who we are listening to, and what is most important to us. And now we arrive in Mark chapter 8, where we begin what we talked about last week with Jesus miraculously feeding another 4,000 people with just a few fish and loaves of bread. And the Pharisees, just after that, asking for a sign of who Jesus is. Really? I mean, with this marketing rule of seven, you'd think everyone would have gotten it by now, right? Jesus has far exceeded the rule of seven signs. Countless people have been healed. Countless people have been delivered from demons. At least 9,000 people have been fed with handfuls of fish and bread. Forgiveness of sins, wise teaching. Clearly, Jesus' marketing strategy, which was kind of the anti-marketing strategy, is remember he keeps telling people not to tell. But then people saw the miracles and the people did tell. So with all of that, well, it still just didn't seem to work that well, at least on the religious leaders, right? They apparently needed yet another sign, which Jesus says he will not give them. Then he gets in a boat and crosses the Sea of Galilee again. And this is where we pick up reading of Mark chapter 8, verse 14, with the disciples also still trying to figure out Jesus.
Wanafunzi walikuwa wamesahau kuchukua mikate. Walikuwa na mkate mmoja tu katika mashua. Yesu akawaonya,
angalieni sana. Jihadharini na chachu ya Mafarisayo na chachu ya Herode.
Wanafunzi wakaanza kujadiliana wao kwa wao.
Anasema hivyo kwa kuwa hatuna mikate.
Yesu alitambua hayo, akawaambia,
mbona mnajadiliana juu ya kutokuwa na mikate? Je, bado hamjafahamu wala hamjaelewa? Je, mioyo yenu ni mizito? Je, mnayo macho na hamoni? Mnayo masikio na hamsikii? Je, hamkumbuki wakati ule nilipoimega ile mikate mitano na kuwapa watu 5,000? Mlikusanya vikapu vingapi vya mabaki?
Wakamjibu,
12.
Na nilipoimega ile mikate 7 na kuwapa watu 4,000, mlikusanya vikapu vingapi vya mabaki?
Wakamjibu,
7.
Basi akawaambia,
na bado hamjaelewa?
Yesu alifika Bethsaida pamoja na wanafunzi wake. Huko watu wakamletea kipofu mmoja, wakamwomba amguse. Yesu akamshika huyo kipofu mkono, akampeleka nje ya kijiji. Akamtemea mate machoni, akamwekea mikono, akamuuliza,
je, unaweza kuona kitu?
Huyo kipofu akatazama, akasema,
ninawaona watu wanaonekana kama miti inayotembea.
Kisha Yesu akamwekea tena mikono machoni, naye akakaza macho, uwezo wake wa kuona ukamrudia, akaona kila kitu sawa sawa.
But the disciples had forgotten to bring any food. They had only one loaf of bread with them in the boat. As they were crossing the lake, Jesus warned them, "Watch out! Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and of Herod." At this, they began to argue with each other because they hadn't brought any bread. Jesus knew what they were saying, so he said, "Why are you arguing about having no bread? Don't you know or understand even yet? Are your hearts too hard to take it in? You have eyes, can't you see? You have ears, can't you hear? Don't you remember anything at all? When I fed the 5,000 with 5 loaves of bread, how many baskets of leftovers did you pick up afterward?"
12,
they said. "And when I fed the 4,000 with 7 loaves, how many large baskets of leftovers did you pick up?"
7,
they said. "Don't you understand yet?" he asked them. Jesus heals a blind man. When they arrived at Bethsaida, some people brought a blind man to Jesus, and they begged him to touch the man and heal him. Jesus took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. Then, spitting on the man's eyes, he laid his hands on him and asked, "Can you see anything now?" The man looked around.
"Yes,"
he said.
"I see people, but I can't see them very clearly. They look like trees walking around."
Then Jesus placed his hands on the man's eyes again, and his eyes were opened. His sight was completely restored, and he could see everything clearly.
In verses 14 to 21, Jesus tries to warn the disciples not to be like the Pharisees, right? Don't miss the signs, and definitely don't miss the signs by getting lost in this moment. Not to forget what Jesus had done when they were in a mess right now. But they got embarrassed by their own mistakes. "Oh, we only brought one loaf of bread." And so they're thinking about themselves and thinking, that's what Jesus is talking about, right? My current mistake. And in their focus on themselves, they forgot Jesus again. And it says, starting in verse 17, Jesus knew what they were discussing and said, "Why are you talking about the fact that you don't have any bread? Don't you grasp what has happened? Don't you understand? Are your hearts so resistant to what God is doing? Don't you have eyes? Why can't you see? Don't you have ears? Why can't you hear? Don't you remember?" And he reminds them of the miracles of the 5,000 and the 4,000. But can't you relate? We get so focused on what we don't have. We don't realize what we do have. And we completely forget who we have, Jesus. And as we'll get to in a moment, I think this is partially because we don't realize who Jesus really is. So hold that thought. Then we move to verse 22. They get to the next town. And the miracle Jesus does there is healing a blind man. After asking the disciples, "Are you blind?" Seems kind of purposeful. He takes someone who cannot see and causes them to see. It's interesting timing. The words Mark uses for the miracle are in verse 25, making it even more interesting to me. "When the man could see," it said, "he looked with eyes wide open. His sight was restored, and he could see everything clearly." A contrast to the question Jesus had just asked his disciples, huh? And then he takes his disciples away again. And you know what I love here? It's what we always, or at least I always, forget when I'm reading a book or hearing a story. We're usually just getting the highlights, the big moments, the ahas. In between all those, there's a lot of walking, eating, chatting, laundry, doing the things that need to be done, right? I'm pretty sure that it was at least a few hours, if not overnight or a few days even later, that Jesus and his disciples are walking again. Everyone at least has had a little bit of time here, but Jesus has not forgotten the important thing, the foundational pieces that disciples need to know. So good teacher and good God that he is, he asks them some very important questions on the way as they walk. "Who do people say I am?" And then, "Who do you say I am?" Jesus is good like that and hard like that. He walks with us. He goes on the journey with us. He doesn't leave us. But on the way, he asks us questions. He helps us to see and to grow. So he starts with helping the disciples clarify their thinking. He's saying, "Well, let's separate a couple of things here, friends. First, who do other people say that I am? I know you guys are around the crowds while I'm preaching. I know you're hearing all kinds of voices and they're saying all kinds of things, right? So let's talk about it. Let's get it out in the open. Who do they say I am?" And they answer, And then he moves to the next question. Okay, that's a good list. Thanks for the information. Now, who do you say I am? After all the miracles, after all the conversations, after the provision, after the sighing, after the Pharisees not seeing and the blind man seeing, here is the question. Who do you say I am? And Peter, who always says what he's thinking, whether or not he has truly thought it through or not, remember, no filter Peter, Peter answers, "You are the Christ, the Messiah." He sees. For just a moment, he sees. In a few moments, if you've read the rest of Mark chapter 8, you'll see that he doesn't see. But we don't have time to get into that this morning. You can read that on your own. You could also go back on our church website and look up the sermon on No Filter Peter from last summer to remind yourselves about that. But we need to focus on something else this morning. Jesus asks the question, "Who do you say I am?" And he is still asking that question to us today. Because how we answer that question makes a lot of difference for how we live our lives. If Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, if Jesus is God, if Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, if Jesus is all-powerful and all-loving, if Jesus can forgive sin, if Jesus knows the way for us to live our best lives, if Jesus can do things no one else can do, if Jesus can take a little and make it enough with leftovers, then wouldn't we want to follow him? Because I return to where I began. Who we follow is who we become like. And what we keep doing is what we become. Peter and Jesus' other disciples understood this in some ways. They were already following, right? As I mentioned, there's more to the story, but I don't think that this is the time to continue. I want us to sit for the month of December with this question. Who do I say Jesus is? Who do you say Jesus is? As we go back and hear about his birth, as we sit during the Advent season, which means waiting, as we wrestle between the now and the not yet of Advent and Christmas and all that is promised for the ends of things, I challenge you to daily ask yourself this question. Who do I say Jesus is? If he's just a good teacher, you'll listen and learn the things you're interested in and leave the rest behind, like we do with all the other teachers. If he's a historical figure, you'll read his story with interest and close the book and say, like my husband Matt used to say when he read storybooks to our children, closed it, special book, and drop it on the floor. It was their evening routine that brought laughter. And then we move on. If he's a spiritual teacher like other pastors and preachers and religious leaders, you might nod and maybe wrestle with his teaching and maybe even take it pretty seriously. You might try to practice some of his teachings. You might admire him. You might even worship him in a way, bowing to his wisdom. But if Jesus is God in human form, if Jesus has a plan for the whole world, a plan of hope and healing and joy and love, if Jesus can take all of the pieces of your life, front stage and backstage, and create shalom out of them, if Jesus can take all the pieces of this world, public, private, first world, third world, war, peace, poor, rich, broken, and more broken, and create shalom out of them? If Jesus is about this shalom, right relationship with God, with ourselves, with other people, and with the earth, then the response we have to him would be more than listening, more than observing, more than admiring, more than practicing some of the teaching, even more than worshiping him. It would be exactly what he called his disciples to in Mark chapter 8, verses 34 and 35. All who want to come after me must say no to themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. All who want to save their lives will lose them. But all who lose their lives because of me and because of the good news will save them. This is both a one-time decision and a lifetime commitment. It would be following. My prayer for each of us during this Christmas season is that we would see Jesus more clearly and choose to follow, that we may lose our lives so that we might find them in Jesus and in his shalom. And it all starts with a question. Who do you say Jesus is?